Like a chrysalis, we're emerging from the economy of the Industrial Revolution. An economy confined to and limited by the Earth's physical resources, into the economy in mind, in which there are no bounds on human imagination, and the freedom to create is the most precious natural resource.
Welcome to the Soul of Enterprise, Business in the Knowledge Economy, sponsored by Sage, transforming the way people think and work, enabling their organizations to thrive. I'm Ed Kless with my friend and co-host Ron Baker, and folks, on today's show, leveraging logic, unleashing magic, the art of subscription. Hey, Ron.
Hey, Ed. How's it going?
Going great. Going great.
Feels good to be back from 90 Minds in Palm Springs. That was fun.
Yes, it was fun. That was fun to be out there with that crew and see some old friends. But yeah, back in the saddle today, though.
Yeah, and this show is a result of an email thread with a guy that I met who first contacted us, I think through the Time's Up Club, actually, mm-hmm. sent us a message. And his name is Riley Newman. And really interesting guy. We've since corresponded quite a bit. He sent me a copy of his book that I'm literally sipping from. You'd love this book. It's called Brandy, 101 Sips of Wisdom for Attaining a Successful Brand.
There you go.
It's a stunningly beautiful book, too. I mean, it's really, really well done. Little chapters, and I've been dipping into it. I'm really enjoying it, and he keeps asking me if I finished yet. It's probably going to be a while, Randy, but I'll get there. I promise. Or Riley, I'll get there. So I thought what I'd do, Ed, is read his first email, because that kind of sets up what we're talking about today, mm-hmm. with magic and logic and subscription and all of that. So here's what he said. He said, been a longtime fan and follower of all that you both broadcast into the world. Love the mental models and the theories you both craft. I'm reading Time's Up and feel it's a nice refresher on a lot of the principles that you both talk about often. It has been very rewarding. I keep running into a roadblock or blocks of just how to apply this to my brand creation business. He calls himself a brand scientist, by the way, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. He says, we already don't do any hourly pricing or tracking, which I'm quite proud of, and we are being viewed as experts in our space. The subscription model makes a lot of sense to me, especially because I do pride our work on the transformations we help businesses achieve. What's funny is that most clients do enter into a monthly payment plan already to help with cash flow and payment scheduling. So I feel I'm very close. I just can't figure out how to transition. I even made a new design business that focuses on production design work for a specific industry. It is only subscription, and I'm preparing to launch that as well, since it has received solid feedback from businesses in that industry. Thank you for listening to me rant, Riley Newman. So, Ed, so this email goes on, and we exchanged some ideas back and forth, and I just thought he came up with some brilliant ideas that fit into the framework of magic logic, the smile curve, and I just thought we could talk about that. This is obviously in the context of a branding agency, but it could apply just as specifically to a law firm or an accounting firm or any professional firm. So that's why I thought this would make an interesting show.
I thought so too, and read the email string that you sent along. And it's funny, as you both anticipated my ideas as I was formatting them as I'm reading through. But I just want to say one thing that struck me, and both of you alluded to this, but you didn't say it this way. Okay. And so this is one. Who said brand is a static thing?
Right.
Right. Whoever said brand is a static thing is, because I think that's potentially a misnomer, certainly not of Riley, but I think of the people who potentially go out and look for a brand, that it's a new logo.
One and done. Just do it once. Like pricing. Yeah, we're going to figure this out once and never revisit it.
Right. So I think that's the one of perhaps the biggest thing. And Riley and you are both right. It's more about educating the customer to that fact. I think that we understand that. And I think that's true of the folks that we work with. There's certainly technology folks. An implementation is not a static thing. It should continue to live past what the go live date. So it's really the misapplication of the one and done ideology to a lot of things that aren't one and done.
Hence the art, right, of subscription, yes. Because it's like, you know, having a concierge doctor doesn't mean you're always healthy. You're going to have to work at it and make investments in it. And it's never static. It's always dynamic, evolving relationship. My first response to his initial email that I just read was, hey, look, it sounds like you've already got a lot of things in place, right? Including, I think, the most difficult, which is the whole mind shift that mm-hmm. we're not selling time. We're more focused on business transformations and all of that. My first suggestion to him was what about moving current customers from the branding agency over to this new business? Now, I didn't know if that was possible because he said this new business that he launched on subscription it sounded like in a different field with a different niche or emphasis. So I wasn't sure, but it was just a thought, you know, and then that new business could cannibalize the old business over time. And then he came back and he said, well, the main business, which is Motif Brands, by the way, which is a cool name. He said, what we're trying to do is, you know, move away from production work and focus more on a consultancy that happens to be able to design as the byproduct. And he said, since this is a one-off brand strategy, I'm running into a blockade of how to do subscription for a one-off. Now, this is exactly what you said. He does say later in this thread that, wait a mm-hmm. minute, it's not a one-off. There's things you can do before and after on an ongoing basis. And then he came up with an idea that I think is just brilliant that we'll get to. But he said, you know, I'm playing with creating a brand transformation program that would be a 3-month program, similar, you know, to a personal trainer helping somebody achieve their goals. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, 3 months, that's probably not even long enough. You know, I could see that maybe for like a divorce, you know, attorney. We talk about, you know, you subscribe to a divorce for a period of time, but even that would be years, you know, or mm-hmm. could be years if children were involved, say. And that's when I came back to him and said, well, our colleague Tim Williams distinguishes between the magic and the logic work. And then I brought up how this is a challenge that we're always presented with. You know, how would a funeral parlor, how would a real estate agent do a subscription? Because mm-hmm. those are considered one-off transactional services. And then he came back, which I think with a great idea. He said, I've played with the idea of almost an insurance of a low monthly payment that then can be applied to the project total when time comes for them to rebrand. And I thought, wow, that's really looking ahead. Most companies rebrand at some time, right? Even if it's just a refresh. Mm-hmm. And he said, because most likely a business will rebrand in 3, 5, or 7 years. So he said, in my mind, a one-off service like a rebrand or buying a house has a pre-show and after-show items. And that's where he got into an idea for real estate agents about how they could do this. You know, they could bring you from homeowner to an investor in real estate, you know, or from a renter to a homeowner to an investor. And, you know, he said, then the pricing can be tiered to like do it yourself, we do it with you, or we do it for you type of thing. And I thought, wow, what, you know, it's so, isn't it? And I even said to him, it's so easy for us to come up with creative ideas for other industries that we're not a part of. Mm-hmm. We just can't do it with ourselves.
Right, right.
Because
right.
I thought his idea was in there was really good. I mean, what we're trying to do here is get away from fee for service, that mentality. And he even says it's a difficult thing to try and think about because society has molded us in such a way that, yeah, you provide a service and you get a fee, a price back, mm-hmm. but that's so limiting.
Right. Yeah. And again, I think that's where a lot of us all make the mistake. And look, it's hard for us to apply it to ourselves. you and I, Ron, when we work through some of these things together.
Sure.
You know, so it's not just because you have so much knowledge of your industry that you're stuck in a method of thinking. And it's really these neural pathways that we keep talking about that are firing down one neural path. And that's why the backward bicycle is such an important video that we constantly use. We've been using that for 7 years now, Ron?
At least.
because it really is new neural pathways that have to be broken. What I find interesting, though, and where I think Riley has got his insight, is that his next deal email is about his epiphany, which I'll let you talk about. But the point that I want to make around that is that notice that him going through the process of applying it to a different industry, I think then allowed him to then have that breakthrough in applying it to his own. So for all of the times we get criticized when we have had these workshops, we say, all right, well, how could you sell a roof on a subscription basis? How could you sell children's shoes on a subscription basis? The purpose of that exercise is to start the neural pathways firing so that you're more able to have that breakthrough with regard to your own profession and your own business. And I think that's why those types of exercises are so important.
Yeah, it made me think too of even the Disney question, you know, what time does the 3 o'clock parade start? Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, that's not what they're asking. You know, where's the best place to stand and how far in advance should I get there type of question. But, you know, and every business has that. It's like the landscaper story with the best, you know, curbside appeal. Mm-hmm. It's just a different way of thinking. And then, so in his next email, and I'm interested to see what struck you about his epiphany, because he wrote back and he said, I had a slight epiphany last night as I mulled on this. So after a rebrand project, sometimes a client will want us to do ongoing SEO on the site that we just built. And he said we could include monthly brand calls, web maintenance, maybe growth accountability or something. These are honestly things that we already do for these clients, but they just don't know it. So down the line, he says, I could even see increasing the price of this, plussing it, or maybe introduce a higher tier. And then you can start thinking about just beyond the services to a membership model, mm-hmm. where, you know, like you like to say, membership has its privileges.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's where he's going with this. And I really loved what he came up with in this. And it is, isn't it funny that once you start to think about, yeah, this is all of the stuff that we do after the fact, we do this anyway, where of course we could incorporate this in. And you know, it's just interesting. But once the neurons begin to fire down one way, it really opens up to a much broader point of view.
Absolutely. And I should say this email thread, I think it spanned about 2 or 3 weeks. So mm-hmm. it wasn't like we were shooting back sure. and forth in the same day. It was this mulling, you know, sleeping on this and getting ideas. And it was a really interesting process. So I was really glad to have this exchange with him, because the other thing it just constantly teaches me is people outside our industry, you know, that diversity of thinking mm-hmm. about a different perspective. This is why, you know, Tim Williams has taught us so much, right? Because he just comes at these things from a different perspective, as did the late Reginald Lee with his cost accounting criticisms. He came mm-hmm. at it as an engineer, right. not as a cost accountant. And like you said, that fires the synapses even more.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. But we are up against our first break, Ron. Ron, I want to remind those of you listening that you can get a hold of either one of us by sending one email. That is to ask, ASKTSOE. At verisage.com. The website is, of course, The Soul of Enterprise, where you can see show notes as well as previews to upcoming shows. Our first break, we'd like to remind you to rate this podcast. You can do this by going to ratethispodcast.com/TSOE. And we do remind you about our Patreon channel, patreon.com/TSOE as well. At a certain level, you can get a shout out like Blake Oliver at Earmark CPE does. Check him out at earmarkcpe.com. But right now, a word from our sponsors.
Follow Voice America at facebook.com/Voice America for juicy updates from your favorite radio shows and podcasts.
Have you ever read a book that changed your life? I sure have. Have you ever listened to an advertisement for a book so many times that you question the existence of God? Me too. Hello, I'm Greg Kite. I recorded the advertisement for Ron and Ed's book, The Soul of Enterprise, Dialogues on Blah 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 Whatever, and 4 years later, we're all tired of it, especially me. But thankfully, there's a solution. For just $10 a month, you never have to hear my voice again. For a commercial-free version of The Soul of Enterprise, go to patreon.com/TSOE and subscribe now.
Sage provides accountants with compliance, reporting, and analytic solutions to do more for their clients. These solutions include education programs such as the Sage Accountants Network Client Advisory Service Program. This program delivers the tools to create, package, price, market, and deliver additional services to clients, increasing your profitability and delivering more value to your clients. Let Sage help you grow your business by visiting sageaccountantsnetwork.com.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned into The Soul of Enterprise with Ron Baker and Ed Kless. To find out more about our show, visit us on the web at thesoulofenterprise.com. You can also chat with us on Twitter using hashtag AskTSOE. Now, back to The Soul of Enterprise.
On The Soul of Enterprise with my co-host Ron Baker, we are talking today about leveraging logic, unleashing magic, the art of subscription. And Ron, I want to pick up and talk a little bit more in depth about this thing that we mentioned in the first segment called the smile curve. And I think we've done some more detailed shows on this. I know we've mentioned it multiple times, but it's such an important mental model and that I think is important to talk about. And even if those folks in our audience who have heard it before, I'm sure that you'll get some further insight. I know that I do when I begin to think about this in a different way. But let me first describe for you what the smile curve is. It was developed by this guy by the name of Stan Shi. I believe he was a consultant at McKinsey, but I'm not 100% sure about that. I do know that his insight is really brilliant. And that is that it's not a 2x2, but an X and a Y axis. And along your X axis, you have the stages of production chain. Now on the Y axis, you have the value to the customer. Now, I wanted a slight disclaimer here, and that is while we do believe this is an important concept, it's also important to keep in mind that value from a customer perspective cannot be parsed into the different pieces. The example that we like to use is you walk into a restaurant, and if it's a wonderful restaurant, but a cockroach crawls across your table, you're not going to have a good meal. So it's all of those things. So the janitor is just important as the exterminator, who's just important as the chef, who's just important as the sommelier, who's just important as the wait staff. And everything about it, because we as consumers take those experiences as a whole and don't really parse the value out of any one individual thing. Now, that said, what the smile curve does try to do is to segment those things out. But I think it's really from us as a provider standpoint more than anything else. And to say that, for example, take the iPhone. One of the most valuable portions of it is the design, the concept and design. So that would start on the left-hand side of the curve pretty high on the value, because you have to come up with the design for the iPhone. And then over time, you have to have other things that are involved in that. And then at the base of the smile curve, when it comes to, which is the middle, the bottom part of the smile, is going to be where it's assembled or manufactured. So from a customer perspective, the actual assembly, the putting together of the thing is of less perceived value to the customer than the design. And then the curve then works its way back up toward the top as you get over to the right-hand side, where you have your aftermarket service. So this is where you would have support, where you would have, you know, technical support, that kind of thing for the iPhone. Even the App Store is probably aftermarket. All of those things that happen after you get the item and what you can do with it after the fact that you've owned it for a certain period of time. So that's the concept of the smile curve. You see that the value starts out high, goes down low, and then comes back high. So now you're thinking about this in terms of a smile. Now, right. One quick challenge before we move on is that oftentimes, especially in the technology sector, but I also think in many professional firms, the payment system, especially when you're doing something by the hour or even fee for service, the payment for that is actually a frown curve because it's inverted, right? We don't have them pay much at the beginning. We don't have them pay much at the end, but we make them pay a whole heck of a lot in the middle when the perception of value is the lowest to them. So it's inversely proportional to the perceived value as to how much you're paying at the same time. So one of the beauties that we think of the subscription model is that it levels out. It completely takes that payment part out of the equation and makes it a straight line across. So there's no worry about it being a frown the other way. So I hope that made sense to you and our audience, Ron, as well.
Right. It did. I mean, it's a big U. It's kind of an elongated U. It looks like a smile.
Yeah, it looks like a smile.
It's the smile curve. And of course, it's on the sides of the smile where you find all the value. Like you said, the concept, the R&D, branding would be in there. Design would be in there. I also think of this, Ed, as like pre-sale or pre-delivery of services and post-delivery. Mm-hmm. You know, like once that iPhone comes back from China, it goes into the distribution network, whether it's in the Apple store or whatever. There's marketing around that. There's obviously sales and support, the App Store, Apple Care, warranties mm-hmm. if you're an auto dealer, you know, service and all of that. And like you love to point out when we show the frown curve is not only are we trying to make all our money on the low point of the curve, the actual doing of the work, the production, whether it's the data entry, the tax return or whatever, it's really in the sides of the curve. And we not only don't we charge for that, but we don't charge for it. We don't even really discuss it that much with the customer. Mm-hmm. We kind of go through it from a scope of work process.
Right.
But that's the only attention we pay to it. And yet that's where the bulk of the value is.
Certainly.
So when Tim did this for advertising agencies, he customized a smile curve for advertising agencies. And before we talk about that, I think there's another really important distinction that Tim likes to talk about. Now, he's not the creator of this. Two guys in the UK came up with this, and I forget their names, but they separated out the type of work that an advertising agency can do between magic and logic work. And magic is customer-based. It should be customer-based pricing or value-based pricing. That's where you do design, solutions, ideation. This is the high-level creation work. The logic, which is more on a unit-based pricing, whether that's hourly or scope of work, you know, fee-for-service, that's where you're building things, deliverables, you're executing things. It's very logical. It's very repetitive. It's somewhat predictable. And the distinction that Tim loves to make between magic and logic, and I think this is beautiful, and this is hence the title of our show, The Art of Subscription. Magic work is there's margin and mystery. And logic work is, as Seth Godin loves to say, the easier it is to quantify, the less it's worth. So we get all hung up on, is it predictable? What's the scope of work? How many transactions? Well, to the extent that it's quantifiable like that, it's worth a heck of a lot less. And therefore, you should divide the work up between the magic components and the logic components, hence go back to the smile curve. And Tim's for the agency is this. On the left-hand side of the smile, so kind of like the R&D and the design for the iPhone and all of that, he's got insights and diagnostics and strategy, concept, and even financing could be in there. And that's all magic work. The bottom of the curve for an advertising agency, the logic work, is production, activation, and distribution. So, you know, point of sale things, banners, logos even to some extent. But then the other side of the curve coming back up on top of the smile, things like optimization, analysis, measurements, KPIs, I guess SEO would be in there, you know, all those types of things. And I guess what the subscription model allows us to do is have the sides of the smile throw a halo over the lower valued logic work. So you can charge a higher price for just taking care of everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And what I think the other thing that I'll point out here, and this is maybe an addition to the 2024 edition of the Smile Curve, which of this work is more likely to be get accomplished by AI?
I would even say some of the magic work is prone to be AI generated, or at least some of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But certainly anything that's repetitive, that's ripe for being taken over by the bots, my friend.
Yeah. What did Ogilvy do? They split in the UK, they came up with, what was it? Red Works. They called it a more beautiful factory. And that was all their logic work. They were going to put the production in there, you know, all the kind of tedious stuff that could be AI generated or largely, and put it in there. But then they did Ogilvy Red, which was the sides of the smile. That was the ideation, the grand strategy, the branding approach and all of that. And I just think that's a fantastic framework to think about, not only for agencies, but for any professional firm.
Right. Well, this, I mean, goes back to, I think Rory Sutherland tells a story about, you know, charging somebody $250 an hour for resizing of a banner ad. And they're like, yeah, we don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah, we don't want to pay that. Yeah, that's Tim's famous example. Yeah, yeah. About that. And I think it's a wonderful framework. And, you know, and now I think this leads to some interesting insights as well from a strategy perspective. Maybe your firm doesn't do any of the logic work, or maybe you do what Riley did, where you create another entity and what Ogilvy did, and you throw the logic work over there, but you hold on to the magic work. But I think the subscription model is finally one, because its emphasis isn't on fee for service, that now we're paying for everything. And as you said, with the disclaimer to the Smile Curve, value is indivisible. Mm-hmm. Value is very holistic. We can't bust it up to, you know, what do I value about United Airlines? Oh, well, they fly the 787 and I can sit in first class. I don't think about it that way. You know, it's all holistic. And just like the concierge docs or the DPC docs, I'm buying peace of mind, convenience, better health, you know, making investments, those types of things. And man, that's what subscription does a beautiful job for, much more than, you know, pricing based on scope of work.
I think that's so important. And Ron, when we come back, I'd like you to address the title of this show and why you think that we should be leveraging logic, which will unleash the magic. But we'll get to that after the break. I want to remind our listeners that they can contact either one of us by sending an email to asktsoe@verisage.com. Yes, the website is The Soul of Enterprise, where you can see show notes, previews to upcoming shows as well. We also have our Patreon channel out there, patreon.com/TSOE. That Patreon channel is sponsored by 90 Minds. That's the conference that Ron and I were at last week in lovely Palm Springs, California. If you need a mind, find one at 90minds.com. But right now, a word from our sponsors.
Enjoying our shows and can't get enough of us? Follow us on Instagram at Voice America Talk Radio and see what we're cooking up for you.
Sage provides accountants with compliance, reporting, and analytic solutions to do more for their clients. These solutions include education programs such as the Sage Accountants Network Client Advisory Service Program. This program delivers the tools to create, package, price, market, and deliver additional services to clients, increasing your profitability and delivering more value to your clients. Let Sage help you grow your business by visiting sageaccountantsnetwork.com.
Have you ever listened to an online radio show that changed your life? I'm required to say that I have. Have you ever stopped listening to an online radio show because the commercials were mind-numbingly repetitive? Of course you haven't, because you're here right now. Look, you don't have to listen to me anymore. There's a commercial-free version of this show, and it only costs $10 a month. And for $15 a month, you get no commercials plus bonus content. Go to patreon.com/TSOE, subscribe now, and be free. You're worth it.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned into The Soul of Enterprise with Ron Baker and Ed Klass. To find out more about our show, visit us on the web at thesoulofenterprise.com. You can also chat with us on Twitter using hashtag AskTSOE. Now, back to The Soul of Enterprise.
On The Soul of Enterprise today, we are talking about leveraging logic, unleashing magic, the art of subscription. And Ron, we left it off at the last segment, and I wanted to talk about this for a little bit, because I think the title that you came up here, with the help of our assistant, by the way, I believe that we used our intern for this.
Sage Copilot.
Sage Copilot. Leveraging logic, unleashing magic. And we've alluded to it, but what did you mean when you adapted that as the title? What about leveraging logic that allows you to unleash magic, and why is it so important?
Yeah, it's the recognition that we have to do the lot. You know, some firms, this is all based on your strategy, but some firms are going to decide to do the logic work. And you know, you hear this in accounting all the time. We can't make good strategy decisions or help the client grow their business unless we have very sound numbers. So we've got to control the accounting, you know, the part, and that's the A in CAS. And I thought, well, that's the leverage. I mean, we're leveraging that, but we're only doing that as a means to an end to enhance the magic work that we're doing. Mm-hmm. It's the solid foundation for the magic work. That's kind of what I meant by the leveraging the logic and unleashing the magic.
Well, and I think that's such an important point. And many of our listeners are in the accounting profession. And what we're seeing today is like, what is the difference between what does your A stand for in CAS? Is it accounting? Is it advisory? Is it both? And a lot of times I talk to folks and they're like, yeah, it's a mix of both. But where we want them to morph for is if you're going to do advisory, I think you gotta ultimately look to only do advisory for all customers. I don't think you want to do both the low end accounting work and advisory stuff unless it's all wrapped up in the same package for the same customer.
Right.
And I think that's really where I think many of the firms that have adopted this strategy are getting stuck. Well, because they're not adapting the strategy, right? They're trying to be all things to all people. Our famous McDonald's and Morton's. They're trying to do the low end quick work, and they're also trying to be the high end restaurant, and it's just not going to work. It's not going to play. And look, this gets back to I think the thing that Riley was talking about. You've got to create sometimes a separate brand to handle those two different things. Exactly what Ogilvy did with Ogilvy Red and Ogilvy Red Works. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Why not create a secondary brand for it? I don't fully understand the resistance to that, especially among the CPA community. I think they think their brands are a lot stronger than they really are, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And the other approach you could do is what our colleague in the UK does, Paul O'Byrne with OBK accounting firm, their chartered accountants. And they do both, obviously, magic and logic work, but they're more than happy to let other CPAs do the logic work and just handle the customer's magic work. Like Paul Kennedy loves to say, we love to start where other firms leave off. You know, mm-hmm. They do the logic work, but they don't touch the magic. And what I would encourage firms to do is not take on just logic alone customers. In other words, if we're not doing the magic work, we're not going to touch your logic work. We're not going to do your tax returns. We're not going to do your accounting unless you're on board for our advisory services, whatever those may be. And I think that's much easier to do in a membership model. Mm-hmm. Like I can't go to Costco and shop unless I'm a member.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I can't just buy your logic. Now, the advantage, I think, of the Ogilvy approach where you have the two separate brands is you could just have logic only customers in the logic works, you know, in their beautiful factory. Sure, I'm sure they have just one off, you know, logic type customers. But if you want to do, I think OBK's got it more correct, at least for accounting firms, that you'd want to do both. I mean, if you want to get into advisory, you got to kind of make the leap. I mean, you can't have a foot in both places, I don't think.
No, and I think that's the brilliant part of it. Yes, you can have those customers if you create the second brand. And I think what most people are unwilling to do is to create that second brand, and that's the problem.
Right. And Riley put it in an interesting way. He said, in my mind, he said, it's like using the service, and he's talking here, I guess, the logic work, as a Trojan horse, since that's much easier pill for the client to swallow. It's like, yeah, okay, they sign up. you do their cast work for a few months, you prove yourself, you prove you're worthy, you prove you can do more. And he says, then once that armor's been penetrated, you expand the value from within. And then I think it's easier to transition than maybe to a membership model where you're kind of doing everything, where you can get into those serial transformations that we like to talk about as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think that's an interesting strategy. The challenge, of course, is from a pricing perspective, is if you're putting too low a price on that, you really want to get into the magic aspect of it. Are you charging enough, at least up front, to make that happen? Because, you know, yes, you can establish a beachhead with, and this gets back to the three types of pricing, right? Skim, neutral, and penetration. You don't necessarily want to go into the market on a penetration price with the belief that you're going to absolutely be able to expand to neutral and or skim, because that's going to be really, really difficult to do. It's actually easier to go the other way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the magic work throws a halo over the logic work, allowing you to move up in price. You know, Stanley Marcus, when he ran Neiman Marcus, he said, he did the His and Her Christmas catalog, which I still think they do. I'm not sure. But, he did all that and got all that publicity. And then he said, and every Christmas season, I would make sure that each store had $25 to $50 gifts. So people would go in and just buy something for 20, on the logic side, but mm-hmm. say, hey, this came from Neiman Marcus, the store that's got, His and Her camels. I mean, he literally said it threw a halo over the value of even those cheaper gifts. There was just more mystique. It's like opening up the Tiffany box, even if it's a corn cob holder or something, it's from Tiffany's, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. It's just got this halo of value around it.
Yeah. And I really like where Riley was going with that, except I just would just put that caution out about the pricing aspect of things, that you make sure that you don't want to get in trouble by trying to recover pricing by pricing too low in that circumstance.
Absolutely. And one of the things, this is the whole reason for Time's Up and the subscription model. I think it gives us enormous pricing power, just like the concierge doctors. Mm-hmm. I mean, nobody thought anybody would pay $24,000 a year for a doctor. They thought that was nuts. And yet there's a ton of people out there that are willing to pay for that white glove service, that peace of mind, that insurance, that just the hassle-free, the whole experience is just completely different. And yeah, there's lots of people that are willing to pay for that. And of course, you got to deliver, and that puts a lot of pressure on us to exceed expectations, create a great customer experience, and constantly plus the offering, which is also a big part of this. And we talked about that a little bit in this email exchange, how you've got to constantly plus the offering. But it's holistic, and it's crazy to divide things into a scope of work. That's why I'm just so anti scope of work lately, because it's just so narrow. We're so much more than the scope of work. When you don that mantle of brand scientist or CPA or lawyer, you are so much more than the scope of your services in terms of the value that you can deliver based on a Zoom meeting or a phone call, or just the client knowing that you're there and you have their backside.
Yeah. Yeah. But I do want to mention though, and perhaps we can close the segment out on this conversation, that if you are going to go in and try to get a penetration pricing strategy, this whole notion of the Trojan horse, so to speak, I think you've really got to be careful about your design of that offering so that it truly does strip away some of the stuff that would be considered of high value, so that you have something to offer the customers that you can prove yourself to them, that you're able to handle this stuff and do it really, really well. But you want to make sure that you're not including some of the, or maybe not so much any of the magic work in that at all. So, but know that that's going to be an offer that you're going to make at some point in the future. Because that's an important strategy point that I think that needs to be made.
Yeah, it's like building a flanking product. I mean, your lowest priced option, especially like if you use three tiers or something like that, it needs to be the least desirable option. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why it's a cheap price, because there's less value in it.
Right, less value, not no value. No value would be bad. but less value. Less, the value still has to be there to a certain extent. But I think it's important for people to design that in from the get-go and not do it as an afterthought, because it's really hard to do it after the fact.
Yeah, it's really hard to move up once you started with a penetration price, because you're setting that reference point in the consumer's mind, mm-hmm. and it's just really hard to move up from there. But if you start there, you can always come down. You can always move from a skim to a neutral pricing strategy. It's just hard to move from bottom to top.
Well, and this, I think goes back to the point that we've made a couple of times. I know I have, maybe I'm repeating myself, but I just think that this is such an important thing, that if that low value offering is so distinguishable from the high value stuff that you do offer, it's got to be a separate brand. Because, yeah. You know, it's not just a lower entry point, but a complete and total separate brand if it's going to be that distinguishing from the magic work that you're really doing. I mean, look at the way Ogilvy did it. Ogilvy Red and Ogilvy Red Works. I mean,
yep.
It's, you know, still pretty close, but there it's clear still in the customer's mind what that it's a beautiful factory, right? The factory right. model.
It's what also our colleague Dan Morris did when he took his low-end tax returns, which he had, you know, hundreds of, and he carved them out of the mothership CPA firm, moved them across the street and branded it Express Tax, put an enrolled agent in charge of that firm. But they had separate branding, they had a separate pricing model. Everything about that firm was different. But then if people still needed a CPA, they could migrate back to the mothership firm from Express Tax, and that was a brilliant strategy.
Mm-hmm. And as I recall, he ended up selling that firm then.
He did
after the fact, so which I think is an important point to make.
He did. He ran it for a few years. It was nothing but profitable and without very much work, because he didn't touch any of those customers. But he actually ended up selling it to the EA who was running it.
Yeah, perfect. And that's a good long-term strategy too.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, especially if you can get it as recurring work too, because it's going to have a higher value for resale as well. So
right. So, you know, I asked Riley if he'd mind if I shared our email thread. He said to me, Ed, he said, yeah, go ahead and share. I'm fine with my name being mentioned. My ego would like that probably. So thank you, Riley. Thank you for letting me share that. Thank you for your book, Brandy, 101 Sips of Wisdom for Attaining a Successful Brand. And I definitely love your thinking. I think it's really creative. And boy, if we could have the marketing agencies kind of bring their creativity to this issue, mm-hmm. we could see some real innovation in this space.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm surprised we haven't seen more of it.
Well, I'm not, Ron. I'm never surprised by lack of innovation from professional organizations. Dare I say that way, but it's kind of true. We just get stuck in a ways. We need the young folk. We need you young folk listening out there to come and school us on how this stuff should be done. But we are up against our third and final break. Want to remind you can get a hold of Ron or me by sending an email to asktsoe@verisage.com. Yes, the website is thesoulofenterprise, all1word.com, where you can see show notes, previews to upcoming shows as well. Do us a favor and go out and rate this podcast at ratethispodcast.com. Do want to remind you that if you do give us a review, we will read it on the air, good, bad, or indifferent. But even if you just click a quick rating on this, it helps others find the show. We really appreciate that. Make sure you also, if you're listening to this, go and subscribe so it ensures you never miss an episode again. But right now, a word from our sponsor and my employer, Sage.
A little birdie told me Voice America is on X. At Voice America TRN.
Sage provides accountants with compliance, reporting, and analytic solutions to do more for their clients. These solutions include education programs such as the Sage Accountants Network Client Advisory Service Program. This program delivers the tools to create, package, price, market, and deliver additional services to clients, increasing your profitability and delivering more value to your clients. Let Sage help you grow your business by visiting sageaccountantsnetwork.com.
Have you ever been so annoyed by a commercial for a $5 ebook that you were willing to pay $10 to never hear it again? I sure have. Hello, I'm Greg Kite. Over the last several years, you've come to hate me, and I hate me too. By now, you know that for $5, you can get a copy of Ron and Ed's book. What you might not know is, for twice that much every month for forever, you can stop hearing me plug Ron and Ed's book, which totally makes sense, like the Diamond Water Paradox. Go to patreon.com/TSOE and subscribe today. Please, for the love of God, make it stop!
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned into The Soul of Enterprise with Ron Baker and Ed Klass. To find out more about our show, visit us on the web at thesoulofenterprise.com. You can also chat with us on Twitter using hashtag AskTSOE. Now, back to The Soul of Enterprise.
Welcome back, everybody. We talked about leveraging logic and unleashing magic, the art of subscription. And it was an email thread between me and a guy named Riley Newman from Motif Brands. And Ed, I think we covered that pretty well. We got into the smile curve. And by the way, our social media and marketer, Greg Trico, tells us that we did do a show on the smile curve. And it was actually the show that we did with the interview with Dr. Reed Holden, the pricing expert. And it's number 18. And I know we've talked about the smile curve since then. We may have even dedicated a show to it. But it's we did talk about it on show number 18, and we probably have it in the show notes too, a copy of the smile curve. Or if you just Google Stan Chi smile curve, you'll see it. But it is really a useful framework as long as you keep our caveat in mind that value is not divisible. And of course, that's a Ludwig von Mises point. So
right.
Once again, Ed, the lone Australian in the back of the room.
Austrian.
Yeah, Mises has figured this out 100 years ago. You know, so after this email exchange, Riley came back at me and he said this was interesting too. He said, you know, he was on a post reading about retail theft. Right, I just was at a drugstore, Ed, and everything's locked. All the OTC stuff that's of any substantial price beyond 10 bucks is behind the locked, you know, though it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Anyway, he said retail is moving towards RFID tags to prevent theft. He said, I proposed on this comment that they adopt the Costco membership model, as Costco's theft rate is a fraction of the industry average. And so he said, I could envision a day where I can't walk into Target if I'm not a Red Card account member or a Whole Foods store unless I was a Prime account, you know, subscriber. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I thought, well, that's probably a bridge too far for these guys. They would never be able to change their mindset. Hence, we go back to the mindset issue that we started with. But then a couple of weeks later, Target announces its new Target 360 program, which is launching on April 7th, and you're going to get free same day delivery in as little as an hour, by the way, with no delivery fees. And they'll even give you free 2-day shipping, and you can deliver something to somebody else's door as well. Now, I know Amazon has that for gifts and stuff, and they've had it forever, but you know, that Target's thinking in the right direction. But when you kind of read through the Target, and they have three levels of membership now, they have the Target Circle, the Target Circle card, where it's a credit card, I guess, and you get an additional 5% off everything that you buy, and on top of all the, you know, discounts that you get normally with Target. But now this Target 360 is even a higher tier of membership. But you know what? It's still kind of a loyalty program because you're not paying for the privilege of shopping there. They're kind of buying you. You know, it's not a subscription, but it's probably a move in the right direction.
Well, but let's view this perhaps as going from a different angle. One of my observations on retail is that the more and more of the stores that I do go into, they've got people who are packing and fulfilling orders. Sometimes they outnumber the customers, especially if you go early in the morning. And if you think about that, what they could potentially begin to do, and this is what I'm hearing from Target, is require a membership for the pickup aspect of things. And that at least some price say, hey, listen, if you want us to pick and pack your order for you and take it out, bring it outside to you for free without a delivery charge, then you have to join the membership. So in a way, no, they're not charging you for coming into the store and picking it yourself. Right. But instead they're saying, no, you're going to get this other benefit. I don't know about you, but I'm more and more, I don't want to go into a store. Like I'm more than happy to order stuff online and either have it delivered or go pick it up rather than have to go into the store and search for it myself. And what is interesting is I was just talking with my mentor this morning about this, and we came up with two different examples of stores that are doing it well and not. So for example, he said, Menards, as he called it. I thought it was Maynard's, but he said Menards, and he's from that area of the country. So I'm going to go with Menards. He went in there to buy a freezer, and the six or seven people passed him by and said nothing to him. And they were clearly employees of that. Contrast that with if you've ever spent any time in container store, you can't walk to the back of the store without being asked by at least two people if they can help you. At least two. And I don't think that has changed much. Bizarrely, Container Store is one of the few stores that I enjoy going into because I like to browse and look around and see what some of the new things that they have. But, you know, so I think that it's a really interesting dichotomy to think that it's still ultimately about strategy and what is your strategy from a customer service perspective. And Menards is effectively and by the way, I should have mentioned this, the people that he saw passing him, I submit that he said they were all moving stuff around. And I don't think what he understood is, yeah, they were packing orders for other customers. And so the Menards has basically become more of a warehouse store than an actual retail store. And I think that transition is going to continue to happen.
You know, we've talked about this before, but do you think one of the differences with that container store example is just their culture of providing unbelievable amounts of education to their team members? Mm-hmm. Don't they give 140 hours a year or something to every team member?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And it's over 100 hours, and that's for a part-time person. So it's roughly 10% of all time is on some kind of education for them. And that's not just education on products, which they do a great job with, but just also customer experience as well. Yeah.
Because every time I go into like a Best Buy or something, or even a Staples or Office Depot or whatever, I'm usually just appalled at the terrible service. I mean, it's awful. It's like, why wouldn't I want to shop on Amazon? You're just driving me there because this is just not a good experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. And they, you know, what's bizarre is they think, well, we can't hire that. Well, why not? Why down the street is Chick-fil-A hiring the right people?
I mean, right. How does Container Store get them?
How does Whole Foods do it? Whole Foods is still really a nice shopping experience from a customer standpoint, from a customer satisfaction standpoint. So
how does Disney do it? Disney doesn't pay anything, you know, and yet they put through people through, you know, so much education about their expectations of customer service and all of that. The other thing that speaking of Disney, that this whole Target thing made me think about too was, you know, if you're staying at a Disney property, you can obviously get into the parks early. Why couldn't Target, and maybe not Target, but maybe Macy's or other, you know, Nordstrom, they could have special days. Like I know Nordstrom does have a loyalty program. There are tiers in Nordstrom. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if Nordstrom does this. I haven't looked, but if you're like a Diamond or whatever their top tier, maybe there's just special events that only those people can come to and see specific merchandise, or, you know, merchandise that's being showcased or maybe on sale or whatever. But I could see something like that. That might be pushing it too far for Target, but maybe not for some of these other retailers.
Mm-hmm. Well, for Costco does have an extra hour in the morning for their higher level shoppers. They're open an hour earlier for that group. So it's a different situation. Like it's real interesting to see all of these industries moving over to some kind of membership model. And you know, we've talked about this before, but Costco's membership is, if you look at their profit, their profit and their amount of revenue from memberships is almost identical and has been for years.
although you had that story a few months back where it's actually now it's climbed above their membership. So
they're
probably selling maybe some higher margined items, you know, in there or whatever. And I know they do other stuff, like you can plan vacations and you can buy cars, and I guess Costco gets a kickback on that. I'm not sure, but it's really interesting. So if there's one industry that's ripe for innovation, man, it's retail. Because like Stanley Marcus used to say, otherwise we could just put vending machines in and let people come in, and then at least they wouldn't have to deal with bad breath.
Well, that's called a website, Stanley. So didn't foresee that. All right, Ron, what do we got coming up next week?
Next week, Ed, we're going to be talking to Michael Bright, and he's the managing partner from Eisner Amper on the audit side. And we're going to be talking about private equity and accounting. So I'm really interested to learn about Eisner Amper's new model and how they structured that with the private equity that they have going on there. So looking forward to that.
Me, I am too. I'll see you in 167 hours. This has been The Soul of Enterprise, Business in the Knowledge Economy, sponsored by Sage, transforming the way people think and work, enabling their organizations to thrive. Join us next week at 3 p.m. Eastern, that's noon Pacific. In the meantime, please visit us on the web at www.thesoulofenterprise.com.